Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And Sean, the Olympics are done.
Man, Mr. Wally, it was a fantastic 2 weeks for the Olympics, man. And of course, the U.S. Olympic team putting a number on the world. I mean, I believe there was 101 gold medals. I could be wrong, but I believe there's 101 medals total. And I believe they, it's probably more than that, but I know that they're about 40 medals in front of the second competition. But Sean Wally, there was something to be talked about this past week in the U.S. Olympics, and it had nothing to do with the actual competition. But every time you turn on the news, whether it's sports news or the actual news, it is to talk about one U.S. Olympic swimmer, Ryan Lochte. Man, what do you think about that?
Bremerton's own Ryan Lochte, to be exact. And goodness, you know, you think you're having a great time and then something goes haywire. You do something at the time you don't think is stupid, and it turns out to be, and he's paying dearly.
Well, you know, Ryan expected to be in the Olympics again. I believe he wanted to go one more try into the Olympics here, but I think that's thwarted with the latest events. Man, Sean, I don't know what to say. You know, you have a young man who, you know, for whatever reason felt like, you know, he was out having fun with his buddies and decided that, you know, he wanted to do, you know, some crazy, uncharacteristic things and vandalizing a bathroom at a gas station. What was that all about?
You know, who really knows exactly what happened? Of course, his story has changed now. And yeah, the bathroom was locked. They tore down some signs, reportedly. Security guards got involved. Gun apparently was drawn. It's just crazy to think that, number one, A, they can get away with it. B, they wouldn't tell the truth from the jump.
Well, the crazy part about it, Sean, is that Ryan, how this story got out was, you know, he had exaggerated this story to his mother. Can you believe that? So he tells his mother this story. Now, what's a mom to do? She hears that her gun's being drawn on her son. She's going to make a big deal out of it. Did he not see that? I mean, first of all, we're talking about Ryan Lochte. This isn't like one of the young 19-year-old athletes that is just embarked on the Olympics. This young man is in his 30s, and, you know, here he is telling this story to his mom. His mom breaks out the story. It becomes this big, blown world deal. And, you know, unfortunately, Sean, Ryan Lochte, this isn't his first go-around, you know, in, you know, having these misdemeanor crimes, you know, with the law.
You have to wonder if any of it was done to continue publicity, to keep getting interviews beyond the Olympics. His swimming was done. So Ryan Lochte, his name is going to fade away with the sunset.
Yeah, you know, I just think that it was, you know, four young men that weren't thinking. You know, of course, like, as you had mentioned, you know, their swimming exhibitions were done. You know, it sounds like Ryan was going to leave for the States in the next couple of days. He didn't even stick around for the closing ceremonies. And, you know, these guys thought that they were just going to party and, you know, be recluse and everything. And, you know, then this whole ordeal blows up, you know. And again, I hearken back to some of, you know, Ryan Lochte's characteristics on things that he's done before. I believe back in 2004, he had a run-in, you know, with, public urination on a property. So this, you know, these types of things just keep following him. And at some point, you know, he's going to have to you know, check himself and say, hey, you know, there has to be a change. At 32 years of age, you know, this kind of thing shouldn't be happening. And, you know, again, as I had mentioned, he was talking about giving it a try for the 2020 Olympics. And I just don't see that happening. You know, what do you see as far as the Olympic Committee, the U.S. Swim Team Committee? What are their ramifications moving forward for Ryan Lochte?
Well, the hammer has to drop at some point because he's putting a bad light not only on the U.S. as a country because he's representing them, but he's on Team USA. So he's hurting the team. He hurt his fellow teammates that were with him at that incident and those that were not. So, you know, 4 years from now, he's 36, going on 37. Will he still be able to compete at a World Olympic level? Yet to be seen. And maybe he won't want to. Who knows? A lot of time between now and then, and we'll see what all shakes down.
Yeah, you know, of course, there are some great things that happened at the U.S. Olympics. Of course, just yesterday, the U.S. men's basketball team did what they had to do in winning the gold medal. You know, at times, Sean, it seemed like it wasn't going to end well for the U.S. men. I mean, you talk about the U.S. women, they just murdered whoever came out onto the court. I mean, they were smashing teams by 30 and 40 points. And then the men, you know, they would scrape by with three-point wins, four-point wins. Well, they get the gold medal, beating Serbia 96-66. And, you know, they played this team earlier in pool play, and they squeaked by with beating Serbia by three. So it was great to see the U.S. men actually taking care of business.
Well, a team stocked full of many NBA players, hard for them not to win gold. I don't think they've ever not won gold, starting back with, the original Dream Team. But now one Carmelo Anthony has three gold medals.
Yeah, three gold medals for Carmelo Anthony. And you mentioned the streak that the U.S. men's team has. I believe it's something like 76 games in a row that they've won. And just received word, breaking news, that Coach Krzyzewski, head men's basketball coach at Duke University, has decided that this will be his last Olympic Games as far as coaching. And his successor is none other than Greg Popovich, Coach Pop, the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. And so it seems like things will be intact moving forward for the U.S. team. As they look to make it 77, 78, 79, and 80 games in a row for the 2020 Olympics.
Not a bad way to go out for Coach K, ending your Olympic tenure as head coach in Rio. You know, not quite a Hawaiian paradise, but a lot of people would argue that it very well could be paradise. And just great views all over Rio and Brazil, and Coach K going out as usual, as he should, on top.
No doubt about it. And man, of course, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit of track and field, you know, for the U.S. Olympics. And of course, man, one Usain Bolt for Jamaica definitely showed out in the Olympics. Of course, gaining, they called it the trifecta, to where you win the 100, the 200, and the 4x100, as he received golds in all three of those. You want to know what the interesting thing I thought, Sean Wally, was about the track and field, Olympic track and field for the United States was? Is there was a lot of coverage for one Usain Bolt for Jamaica.
Well, you could have beat him in a race back in your prime, right?
Oh, yeah. Man, no. Usain Bolt is probably one of the greatest track and field athletes to ever step foot. You talk about somebody 6'5", and you know, once he gets out of the blocks, you know, things start to churn and churn and churn, and he picks up. He actually sustains speed better than any of the other runners that he runs against. As they decline, he maintains, and that's what makes it look like he's running away with it. Is he just has tremendous strength and speed.
Now, Sean, I don't know if you noticed, but we have had multiple past guests here on the double that were at the Olympics working in Rio. And one of them, one Cottrell Macklin, got a Snapchat and he was trending because he got Usain Bolt at the right time when he dabbed after a race, and that picture went all over the world.
Can you believe that? Our boy Cottrell Macklin, of Memphis finest, doing his thing. And of course, you did some things with Cottrell and global basketball down there in Vegas, and that's how that friendship started. But hey, that's some good stuff that was going on. And of course, you know, Sean Wally, there was another former or another guest here on the double that was doing some things in Rio, and that is none other than Australia's own Dave Worsley, who, by the way, is still on Australia time when he was in Rio, because he wished me, Sean, he wished me a happy birthday on August the 14th when he must have been on Australia time, thinking that it was actually the 15th. But tipping my cap to Mr. Dave Worsley out there in Rio doing his thing.
Yeah, and it's great to see two guys we work with in the network sports TV ranks. A lot of cameramen that we've seen and worked with throughout the years. We're also over in Brazil. A couple of guys that I've done some work with in the Pac-12 networks and a few various Pac-12 schools were over there. So just a great experience for the thousands of people that were there for the countless hours and hours of television production.
Now, Sean, I know we put lots of time, energy, and effort into our awesome sports radio show, but at some point, man, we're going to have to get our way over to one of these great world championships such as the Olympics, man. So we're going to have to definitely put our foot down and get in there somewhere.
So what do you think? Michael Phelps, is he the greatest swimmer ever?
Is he the greatest swimmer? Now, I mentioned Usain Bolt being the greatest, one of the greatest track and field athletes to ever walk. But I would probably say that Michael Phelps is the greatest Olympic athlete ever. And I mean, out of all the athletes, you're talking about 23, I believe it's 23. Is it 23, Sean? 23 gold medals that have been won by one Michael Phelps. Now, keep in mind, we talked about Ryan Lochte, and we talked about some of the immaturities and everything that were going on with him, and hopefully he'll be able to right the ship. But let's keep in mind that Michael Phelps isn't too far removed off of having, you know, a little bit of a turmoil in his life. He had the chance to turn it around. The U.S. Olympic Committee and the Swim Committee came down on him. And once he came back, look what he did. I mean, this is just tremendous. 5 gold medals in these Olympics, 6 medals all together. And, man, he put a stomping or a stamp on who he was, not only as a U.S. Olympic swimmer, but as an Olympic athlete altogether. I say that he's the best Olympic athlete ever, Michael Phelps.
And to what you were saying, he's had issues with marijuana. He's had not one, but 2 DUIs. And for him to still be able to withstand all that, pick himself up, dust himself off, and stay at such an elite level that nobody in the world can beat him is pretty amazing.
Yeah, you know, he got focused. He got engaged. He has a son. You know, he's really put himself in a position, and I believe with the understanding, especially after having a son, and understanding that he has a role to lead people, to, you know, and he did just that, man. I mean, he was the epitome of what the Olympic competition is about, you know, being able to, you know, overcome and being able to, you know, overcome those adversities and, you know, do what he did was just amazing.
So I'm sure you've heard, Sean, that ratings for this Olympics in Rio were down significantly. NBC, Universal, and all of the NBC channels cannot be pleased with that for all the money they spend to broadcast the world's games. Why do you think that is? Is it too oversaturated with many different networks airing different events? A lot of people blame the technology and millennials. So what do you think the reason is that these Olympic Games that are very exciting, just people are not watching like they used to?
Well, for one, gosh, and I can't wait till we have our first guest, Bill Herenda, on the show, because I want to ask him this as well. But for one, Sean, NBC, I have to tell you, is they disappointed me in this Olympic coverage. I've never seen a debacle like I've seen as NBC has done with covering the Olympics. First of all, you know, we understand, Sean, you and I, we understand how productions is. And productions tries to do, I think tries to go above and beyond in painting a picture on how they feel things should go. And I believe that NBC dropped the ball on this one, because not only did they want to control the flow of the Olympics, they wanted to control how we saw it, if that makes any sense. And, you know, they wanted to show all of the key events and all of the key sports in the primetime hours between 8 and midnight. First of all, on a weekday, who's going to stay up past 10 o'clock if you're, you know, an avid 9-to-5er? You know, who wants to stay up that late? And so, and on top of that, NBC would, like, keep you in suspense with teasers and keep teasing you until, you know, 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 p.m., they start to show the things that you wanted to see. I thought that that was a travesty, because what you could do in this day and age of technology is you can go on your smartphone or your computer and you can watch it live. There are other countries such as, I believe, the Canadian Broadcasting Channel was showing it live. They were doing a better job than NBC. And to answer your questions, as far as those ratings are concerned, those are the reason why the ratings were down. People were frustrated. You know, you're showing the Olympics on NBC. You're showing it on MSNBC, which is your place for politics. And you're also showing it on the NBC Sports Network. And, you know, I believe that there was the Golf Channel that was in on it as well. So there were four different stations that you were trying to maneuver around to try to watch the Olympics, and you didn't know which channel was going to show what. And that's what made the ratings plummet. It'd
be interesting to see what changes for the Winter Olympics in 2 years, if anything, for the television coverage. And then, of course, again, the Summer Olympics in 4 years. But yes, the Summer Olympics came to a close yesterday, and hopefully Rio can start getting back to normal.
Yeah, you had mentioned that the ratings were down. Also, attendance was down. You know, I don't know if you looked in the stands for a few things. I know a couple of the men's basketball games were packed. I know that gymnastics did a great job. You know, I thought track and field for the most part did a pretty good job on attendance, but you know, once the marquee athletes who people wanted to see weren't running, then the stands weren't packed at all. And so, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, attendance was down. I know that beach volleyball was kind of up and down as well, you know, and until the U.S. came out. And, of course, Brazil did a great job. But, yeah, attendance all around wasn't that good, Sean.
Yeah, and who knows what ticket prices were like, you know, if you compare it to, you know, the large events in the U.S., Super Bowl, or even playoff football, playoff basketball. Those tickets are pretty outrageous as well. So you would think that maybe the World's Games are, maybe they're outpricing the locals. Who knows? I know a lot of people that did travel from other countries, of course, to not only root on their country, but maybe they knew somebody that was involved in the games. So, you know, money was an issue for the Rio games in terms of getting them started and getting all the facilities finished and in a proper order for an Olympic Games. So that could have played a role as well.
Yeah, you know, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, when you're talking about an event such as the Olympics, just like you had mentioned the Super Bowl, there isn't a hard time, it isn't hard to pack the stands for, you know, those types of sports venues. And so for the Olympics to not do that, I think there's enough money out there in the world to where, you know, enough people will get to these events. I just think that it was one of those things that maybe Rio, you know, with all the talks on the Zika virus and, you know, you had a bunch of athletes pulling out, you know, that played a role. And, you know, that played a role for the athletes. So I'm sure that played a role for, you know, the spectators as well.
I know you saw that Coach Lang was in Rio checking out the games.
Yeah, you know, that was good to see Coach Lang there. And he was looking at everything. He was at he was at basketball. He was at swimming and, you know, he even took up golf. So, you know, Coach Herb Lang doing his thing, getting out there and supporting the USA.
Well, Sean, tell everybody who our first guest will be, and stay tuned for that here coming up. Go for it, Sean.
Well, coming back from the break, we have Bill Herenda, and he is a basketball analyst. He does NBA and NCAA basketball, actually all things basketball. We will have him here when we come back from the break. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on The Double with the Double S Express. You are my treasure. You are my treasure. You are my treasure. Yeah, you are my treasure. You are my treasure.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So, guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally. And, of course, Sean Wally, we were just talking about, you know, the Olympics, man. And, you know, man, it was a great 2 weeks. I believe I just lost Sean there. Give me just a second. I'm going to pull him right back. But while we do that, I'm going to bring in our next guest, our first guest of the show, and that is none other than Bill Herenda, basketball analyst extraordinaire, joining us here on The Double. Hey, Bill, how you doing today?
I'm doing terrific. It is always great to be with the Double S Express. With a moniker like that, you know it's rocking on a Monday night. The ceremonies may have closed in Rio, but I have a feeling they're just starting tonight with you guys.
Yeah. Well, man, you know, the Olympic ceremonies just ended, but yes, man, it is. We're kicking things off here. And of course, having you here on the Double makes it fun.
No, it's my pleasure to be here, guys. And, you know, what's interesting, isn't it, that typically this time of the year, there's a little bit of a lull in sports, but now it just seems like it's exploding with everything that has occurred in Rio. The pennant races, of course, is early with exhibition football, and so many dynamite personalities and stories of triumph and travail and struggle at the Olympics. So it just seems like our cup really overfloweth when it comes to sports in August, which typically doesn't really feel like it's the case.
Well, yeah, Bill, and of course, you know, what we had talked about at the beginning of the show to start things off, you had mentioned on your radio show on KFBK in Sacramento, the whole Ryan Lochte deal. I mean, isn't that amazing that, you know, out of all the great things that were happening in the Olympics, Ryan Lochte and his buddies just, you know, happened to go out and what they thought were having fun, and it wound up to be a big world spectacle.
You know what, guys? It's so true. You're right from the standpoint that here you have, and you know, I think what people may struggle with is I think everyone can identify with making mistakes. And, you know, who among us has not, you know, made mistakes in the past? Typically at an age where you're impressionable, you're kind of learning about life, you're navigating your way. And, you know, having played college basketball at UMass Lowell, or I think at any university throughout the country, and really any sport, you're just kind of exposed to different social situations that any student would be. But I think that what people are struggling with here is that with Lochte, okay, not only did he not own it right away, he lied. I'm not going to pretend I wasn't there, but he's 32. So he's kind of beyond, you know, that age of innocence. So it certainly seems like this thing has kind of spiraled out of control, and much of it self-inflicted. If he had just owned it early, immediately, perhaps it would not have been the bigger story that it turned out to be. And of course, you know, you throw in Rio and the apprehension before the games, that it turns into like this international incident. So just a lot there, a lot of the onion to peel, so to speak, with Lochte and his crew down in Rio.
Yeah, Bill, one of the things that we were talking about earlier in the show is not only did that happen, if he, you know, when you're talking about him owning up to, but man, he told his mother. And I mean, you know, you tell mom something, Bill, and especially if a gun is involved, as he had told his mom that he was held at gunpoint, well, why wouldn't it go international?
No, exactly, Sean, you're right. I mean, and that's where I think, you know, listen, when you're supremely talented, I think what happens is you innately and also develop a sense of confidence. And in other words, you could not be the best in something in the world without this confidence. And I think what happens is sometimes you take it beyond the pool or beyond the court or beyond the field, and you just think you're going to get over. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just think, you know, I'm sure they didn't realize that there were cameras. I'm sure they didn't realize that the locals would talk to the local authorities. And just with the milieu surrounding Rio in anticipation of the games, is it safe from a international terrorism perspective? Also, the Zika virus. Are, you know, we saw the green pool. Are they ready to host it? And here we have a, you know, near flawless execution of the games. It's a great reflection on Rio. And then you have this, which kind of tainted, you know, the city of Rio de Janeiro, the country of Brazil. So I think it just boils down to a little bit of hubris, a little bit of pride, thinking you're a little bit too slick. And we can get over on it. And you know what? I'm not even going to come clean with my mom, because I know my mom, God rest her soul, I would have gotten the most heat from her for than anybody. So there you go. So, like, in a way, it all, you know, you can kind of check those boxes. Now, listen, I'm not condoning it at all. I understand it. But, again, you just get to a point in your life where you've got to, you know, embrace it. And I know that, like you said, we talked about it on KFPK this morning, and some people were less than delighted with his explanation with Matt Lauer. And I think it really stems from just the inability – to own it 1,000% and to completely come clean. I think that may have it's still, you're right, Sean, it would have been a huge story regardless, but I think people would be a little bit more understanding. Maybe it wouldn't linger as long if he just 1,000% owned it, like you so astutely put it, even to his mom.
That's the voice of Bill Herenda, KFBK's morning sports anchor down in Sacramento. Bill, we talked about it in the beginning of the show. Attendance seemed to be down in a lot of the events, and also television ratings for NBC are way down. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know what, guys? I have mixed emotions about it. You know, the initial deal, and listen, where we are, and I'm sure all of your listeners, are diehards as far as when it comes to sports. So I love the Olympics for many reasons, and here's one of them. I want a can of orange soda. I go into a store, I'm bombarded with choices. Do I want diet, sugar-free, orange cream? I just want orange soda. So during the Olympics, it's very easy. I can just put the TV on. I got my East Coast feed of NBC. I got my Olympics. Now, I know you could choose amongst the other channels, but, you know, we see the world differently than probably the rest of the population does. I kind of take that with a grain of salt because I think you have to somehow reconcile the digital numbers with the viewership. And also, I'm in the pew of the church that I just like sport. I feel like every night is, you know, every time I'm on air or whatever, it's just like we're on the stoop back in Jersey talking sports. So I'm like Paulie from Goodfellas when they wanted him to buy that restaurant. He said, what do I know about a restaurant? I sit down, I order spaghetti and meatballs, I eat. So I don't know. You know, I'm not a business guy, you know what I mean, or a media like, a Darren Revelle or Richard Deitch that have, you know, very good acumen when it comes to Robert Raiola, a very prominent CPA on Twitter that can really digest and understand the numbers. But when I hear that, I do take it with a grain of salt, thinking, you know, the millennials and digital and what have you. Now, that may not make Madison Avenue feel better when they're paying X amount for, you know, the 60-second spots or they're sponsoring different segments. But I'm not as gloom and doom. You know how it goes. There are three types of people in life. The first group, they see the glass is half full. The second group, half empty. The third group, they don't even see the glass. Now, most people think I'm in the third group. I happen to be in the first group being an optimist. So I always kind of just press the pause button on that. And perhaps NBC will, you know, change the way they're delivering the Olympics because they may have hurt themselves with, you know, tape delay and what have you. So anyway, long answer. I apologize for rambling rather circuitously, but I would say that I just kind of take it with a grain of salt.
Bill, you've done a lot of TV and radio in your professional career. How would you recommend NBC tweak things in Olympics coming forward so that way viewership can get back to where it's been in previous years?
I would go totally transparent. I would go totally live with everything, and I would build around the personalities in the evening. I thought Leslie Jones was a tremendous addition. I think, you know, much of the country, if they were not familiar with her, probably fell in love with her and just her infectious enthusiasm. You know, the Billy Bushes of the world, the Hoda Kotbs, the Matt Lauers, the Natalie Moraleses, Bob Costas, of course, Al Michaels. I would build around their personalities in the evenings, have the events live, and I think they did this, but intertwining the interviews, which I thought the one that Costas did with the gymnastics team with Simone Biles, Allie Raisman, Madison Cochin, and of course Gabby Douglas. I thought that was terrific because he almost just turned the microphone over to them, and that was just great entertainment to really get to know these kids in a much better fashion. So I think they attempted that, but I think where they're really hurting themselves is just playing these games where we're going to show it later. Come on, just show it live. And also, I would be a contrarian as well. You know, why are we watching the World Series, which I'm afraid the New York Mets may not be a participant in this year, guys, just to let you know. Not newsflash. But you know what I mean? Like, I think we're hurting ourselves by playing these games at night and TV is driving it. But again, I would just go live, transparent, and just be real with it. You know what I mean? People, everyone is so sophisticated in this day and age. Come on, don't try to fool us. We know what the outcome is. And I think what happens is I saw it with the people around me. You know, like it just kind of saps the energy. Why am I going to watch this? I already know what happened. So that would be, you know, for what it's worth, that would be my recommendation on tweaking their coverage.
Bill Herenda joining us here on the Double, and Bill, that is exactly how I felt the coverage was. And you know, when you're in a day and age of technology where it's as simple as you going on to your personal Facebook and you're thinking that you're going to watch, you know, the events, you know, even though you understand it, you know that they're taped. Gosh, man, there's so much information that's put out onto those social networks that you can't help but get the information before you actually see it. And that was the part that NBC got wrong. And you know as well as I do, as far as production is concerned, you know, the tech man, the director tries to paint the picture and control everything, and they just can't do that. Like you said, just give it to us the way we want it, and you know, to where we can see it live. Those were the best times.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it, and I think that's really you know, probably a large takeaway for them. And I guess, you know, cutting them a little bit of slack, you never know how it's going to go. It's such a rapidly changing world that we live in when it comes to, you know, the ability, like you said, of being able to share information from a digital format. And also, it was quite interesting, too, because, again, like you guys and your listeners, you know, you're getting the updates anyway. I mean, I'm getting the notifications on my phone, so why not just show these events? And I also think, and I tend to believe that, you know, I'm pretty savvy with negotiating where things are, but I think they would be well served to, in some fashion, promote these events where they're being aired. So I have friends, for example, that worked table tennis, that worked women's basketball, that worked men's basketball, but some of those sports, that worked badminton. So what happens is, like, Jim Cosmore worked badminton, Ari Wolf worked table tennis. So I think NBC would be well served to kind of, in their notifications, maybe promote where it's being aired so then you can get there. You know what I'm saying? I was just like a little fuzzy. Okay, is this CNBC? And then we saw the men's basketball on, I think it was like an outdoor live channel. So that, to me, I think they also could be a bit more specific and helpful in directing folks to where these events are. Particularly when they're being aired live.
Yeah. Now, Bill, you just educated me. I had no clue that Jim Cosmore was doing table tennis.
You know what? It's terrific, Sean. Because he, and you know what? Just to be clear, he did badminton. Ari Wolf was on table tennis. Dave,
oh, gotcha,
Feldman,
gotcha.
Yeah. No, you know, just to be specific now, because I don't want to get the mail of people with Herenda sharing spurious information. The veracity of what this guy says is wrong. You see, it's badminton, not table tennis. But yeah, so there are some obscure sports that that you could see, you know, local and regional talent working. But I just kind of felt myself, oh man, if I had known that that was on, I may have checked it out. And listen, I think NBC, you know, certainly, you know, Marv Albert and Doug Collins were terrific. Rowdy Gaines, I mean, I thought it was fantastic on swimming. And Dan Hicks, this play-by-play guy. Obviously, there's a ton of talented folks in front of and behind the camera, and I think they will get it right and tweak it. And listen, it's like anything else. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. And I think inherently, in such a huge operation over a couple of weeks, global focus, that inevitably you're going to get some criticism. And they're big people. They can take it.
Now, Bill, I want to ask you a question right in your wheelhouse. Of course, you cover a lot of basketball. You were a Kings insider for the Sacramento Kings. Man, the U.S. Olympic men's basketball team, was that not suspense all the way up to the very last game?
You know what? Guys, they really saved their best for last, didn't they? You know what?
Man,
what
they
was
sure
interesting,
did.
They really did. And, you know, Tom Thibodeau, I go way back to him, you know, I went to high school at St. Peter's Prep in Jersey City, but met Tibbs up in New England when he was coaching at Salem State. I played at UMass Lowell. And you know, you could just tell by his countenance how the defense was hurting him, and that being his forte. And when you look at the last three games of the Olympics, they held opponents to a shooting percentage under 50%, actually in the high 30s. Prior to that, three opponents, they had shot 50% or greater. So they turned it on defensively. And, you know, certainly Durant was terrific. Klay Thompson stepped up. Cousins was great in the last game, the double-double. I give DeMarcus a lot of credit for accepting his role. And I think fans in Sacramento see that as a real positive, you know, coming off the bench. And it just goes to show you that you cannot just show up and expect to get it done. I mean, there are great players globally with excellent cohesion, ball movement, and body movement that I tweeted about that you saw from Australia, from Serbia, from France, from others. But they just came up big. I think they trailed by a couple of points in the first quarter, but they had previously that put significant worry and doubt into all of us. But they were sensational yesterday. I thought it was ironic too that Serbia fell off so badly. But their demolition of Australia probably caught the Americans' attention and intensified the game plan and the whole KYP, know your personnel, etc.
KFBK sports anchor Bill Herenda joining us here on the Double. And Bill, sticking with basketball, the Sacramento Kings set to move into the Golden One Center. Have you had a chance to tour that facility? And what can Kings and NBA fans in the 916 expect from that arena?
You know, I think the beauty of this, as you guys know, you know, really transcends the Kings in basketball. And certainly for Sacramento, I think this is the exclamation point on maintaining its status as an NBA city, and to have a world-class edifice that reflects Sacramento and its, you know, growing nature is a huge win for everyone that had a hand in making that happen. And I think that taking a step back, what you're looking at from an NBA perspective is really a building and the amenities that will match, perhaps exceed over the short term. But I think, you know, it would be kind of naive to think that the Kings are automatically going to attract players, attract free agents because of the building. But that's a given. That's an expectation from a draftee's perspective or a free agent's perspective. So I'm just bringing some realism. I don't mean to, you know, be the guy who pulls the plug on the DJ, won't pay for the extra hour, takes the punch bowl away when the party's going. That's not me, but I also have to keep it real. So I think you know, it'll be tremendous. It'll be a great opening. But again, I think what Kings fans want to see is, you know, more W's, more digits under Kings than opponent, and that I think is going to be a challenge.
Is there any reason for optimism for Kings fans for those W's coming in the 2016-17 season?
I think there is. However, the reality is, I believe that the less intervention and influence on Dave Yeager, the better. I think if Yeager is just left alone to coach, and I don't mean left alone like left on an island. Of course, there could be some personnel moves, particularly as you get into the season and into December and as you approach the trade deadline. I don't mean, you know, total laissez-faire, like it's up to him. But I think that that's going to be extremely key. I'm not convinced that the core of free agents is a real talent boon for Sacramento. I don't think they're markedly better or worse from a talent perspective last season. I think last season was a lost opportunity. And when you looked at it in late January, they were in the eighth playoff spot. And, you know, an old friend of mine, Steve Clifford, came in with the Charlotte Hornets, and it was a multiple overtime game, and the Kings lost. And, you know, Cousins was huddled with Rondo and Vlade Divac. And, you know, the media asked, what were you guys talking about? Some particular plays in the game that we didn't agree with was the quote. So to me, you know, it should be about kind of we, like, you know what I mean? Like, I just didn't get a vibe that this And obviously the whole thing, you know, unraveled after that in a rather, you know, dramatic way. So I don't know. I think it's going to be tough. But I think if you just let Jaeger coach, and these guys have got to buy in, they could be better. But I'm just not really, particularly with you see the improvements throughout, you know, and not just Durant going to the Warriors and D'Antoni, you know, with Houston, can they kind of rekindle it? But even if you look at Utah and, you know, Joe Johnson, a signee there that could push them. And, you know, last year New Orleans was injury riddled. They were vulnerable. Phoenix imploded. They're younger. They could be better. The Clippers, of course, they're built to win right now. Can they maintain their health? So I just look around, and, you know, Dallas sputtered early in free agency. They kind of got it together. So I also, you know, look around, and I think, man, everyone is getting better here. So anyway, I'm just being realistic. And I do a lot of radio throughout the NBA, throughout the country, on the NBA in general, but also on Sacramento when, you know, cities are anticipating games with the Kings, either in their city or in Sacramento. So it's been a really hot topic. You know, the whole Cousins-Carl dynamic and Vlade Divac as a GM and what the future holds. But I also think that the Kings really need to identify, you know, what is their identity? What is their purpose? What is their culture? I can't see that in who they've acquired, the mix of talent, and I haven't heard it yet really from Jaeger or Vlade. So I think there's still a lot of question marks surrounding the Kings.
You know, now, Bill, one of the things that I did see on TV is I saw Vivek Ranadivek at the Olympics. And so do you think he's kind of, you know, trying to find out which players he could possibly pick up in an upcoming free agency?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a salient point, and one that, you know, you always have to be scouting. And one of the things that, and I wouldn't want someone to do this to me, you know, to kind of micromanage what I do and how I do it. But one of the things, when you talk to GMs throughout the league, one of the biggest challenges, if not the biggest challenge they have, is how they spend their time. Because they're trying to balance time spent with the team versus time spent scouting. So one quick example, Neil O'Shea from Portland made it to Lehigh in Pennsylvania to see McCollum play before he got hurt at Lehigh. And Portland was early on him. Other teams saw him later, but he drafted him. So when I see Vlade Divac with the Kings very frequently, it seems like almost every game he's with him, home or on the road, that to me is a little bit of a concern. That is there a balance there of the scouting and minding, you know, the cash register back at home? And, you know, from Ranadive's perspective, I mean, listen, you know, he's made some mistakes. I mean, you know, firing Malone was an egregious blunder.
Yeah.
And again, listen, less is more. You know, and listen, you know, the other thing is, Paul, you look around the league, more than a quarter of the league is owned by Silicon Valley guys and gals. And, you know, they've kind of had the Midas touch, and you've got to give them credit in their respective businesses, you know, tech-related, venture capital. But the NBA is a very specific nuance, learning how to be successful there. So, again, I think with Ranadive, less is more. I think Divac is kind of growing and learning in the job. But to me, I would balance my time between the scouting that's necessary with the team. And listen, guys, I got to be transparent here. I was very delighted to see Cousins thrive on the Olympics. He played great. I don't think it's a question of his ability at all. But I went on record, probably the first media person in Sacramento, that they should deal him. They should deal him to rebuild the franchise. I think it'd be good for him. I think he could win in the right environment with the right culture. But trying to build it here around him, I've seen enough that I'm not optimistic that it can it work. Sure, does. I hope for everyone in Sacramento does. But as an objective basketball person, you know, I went on record and said they should deal him. It'd be good for him and be good for the franchise. So you know, it's definitely a team in flux. But listen, it wasn't too long ago that the Warriors were struggling. I mean, actually, obviously, you know, they've caught lightning in a bottle. But anyway, that's just some of my, you know, takes on, you know, what's going on with the Kings with, you know, personnel management and then with ownership.
Bill Herenda, sports anchor on KFBK 93.1 FM and 1530 AM in Sacramento. You can also catch him on iHeartRadio as well. Now, Bill, I'm going to ask you some questions more close to home here. Now, of course, you are the person who is responsible for building the house, the Tsongas Center at UMass Lowell. Man, you know, I got to tell you, I love that arena. I mean, I got a chance to be there in March, and what an awesome, awesome venue. Of course, it's more built for hockey, but of course, you know, put the basketball team on there. The team's looking to do pretty good this year, it sounds like. Pat Duquette's got his team, a couple of returners coming back. They were 7-9 in the conference, but they got, a couple of good players here. What do you see them doing this year?
You know what, Sean? I got a big smile on my face because I have so much respect I have so much respect for the current student athletes at UMass Lowell and great memories of my time there. As part of the basketball team and just fond memories of the guys that, played hockey, the gals that played volleyball, all the student athletes back there. It's interesting because my brother coached there for a couple of years before he moved on to FDU, and they made the tournament this year winning the NEC Conference, the Northeast Conference, with the third youngest team in the country. Now, that's not the third youngest team in the conference, third youngest team on the East Coast in the country. And, I just believe that UMass Lowell can accomplish similar things, that there's absolutely no ceiling on what they can do. You know, they played Michigan really tough a couple of years ago at Michigan. I think they trailed by 2 at the half, and that was when Nick Stauskas was still there. They've always had just really a culture of gritty, overachieving players. And, I played with guys like Gavin Cummings. We played together at St. Peter's Prep and then at UMass Lowell. So we spent 8 years together. And Leo Parent, who was the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference Rookie of the Year, he played for Gordy Chiesa at Manhattan before he transferred back home at Lowell. Bobby Licari was a tremendous point guard. Brian Parath was a great wing player as well at a Millbury, a local kid. So, I see a lot of the same characteristics in these kids coming up now that are competing in the America East. So I just wish them all the best. I'm always rooting for them. I always watch them on the ticker. I always stop. And, the hockey team went to the Frozen Four. I think it was years ago, and they were really close this year again. They lost to Yale in the semifinals. I couldn't believe it. But I said, okay, we let the Ivy League beat us. But anyway, I just love UMass Lowell, and they're the Riverhawks now. They were the Chiefs back in the day when I was there, and I'm really excited to see them continue to do well in the America East Conference and even beyond.
Yeah, Bill, there it's a tough schedule that in the America East because they do play Big East teams. They play UConn. I believe they played Rutgers last year, and so it's a very They have some very stiff competition. Of course, with the great individuals coming back, you got Jahad Thomas averaging 14 points a game, Isaac White doing his thing at about 11. And so, this is a great team moving forward.
Yes, and you know what? I think what's interesting, too, is that when my brother was there, they had UConn. Oh, no, you know who it was? It was actually Providence. They had a shot at the buzzer to beat Providence in an exhibition game, and it was a three-pointer that they missed. But, from that standpoint, this is what I love about UMass Lowell, is that these kids play hard, they're fearless, and a lot of times, they're playing and coming up with guys that are playing in the Big East or in the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC. So, I think they have great mental toughness and the ability to, not pay attention to the jersey on the other team and say, listen, I played against this guy in, AAU. I know I could play here. I know I belong. So, from that standpoint, they're bound to pop somebody. And, you're right. You look at their schedule from last year, they opened up at Northwestern. They played at Notre Dame, Boston College, BU, some of those local folks. Like you said, they lost at Rutgers, but I always, one of the things about UMass Lowell is that I honestly believe that they can win on any given night because that's how we play, that's how they play, and that's why I think there's a brotherhood, and there's just that cohesion, and there's that visceral feel. And, you know, I work a lot of games in the Mountain West Conference for the ESPN family of networks. So from, you know, UNLV to San Diego State to Colorado State to Air Force to New Mexico, you know, I'm always checking these guys out. You know, earlier when I'm doing my prep, I'll have their games on. And the same thing with my brother's games with FDU in that conference as well. So, again, the sky's the limit, and it's just one of these deals that I just find it really interesting that the culture there has kind of remained the same. And, you know, this is a great quote from Bill Riley, who was the hockey coach back in the day there. And his quote is, quote, "What the mind can conceive, the heart can believe, and you can achieve. It's wise to dream big." And that was the mantra in the 80s, and I think it's true today.
Now, Bill, in all of your works in radio and television, what are some of your favorite moments? And then also, what would you tell young high school, maybe college students, on keys to making it in sports broadcasting?
I think for young people, I think to actually do it, there's no substitute for actually doing it. And I think now it's just the golden age of being able to do your own podcast or produce your own sports updates or interviews, or, you know, obviously via YouTube you can produce your own shows. So I think that my advice for young people is just to do it. And I think to be a lifelong learner is really important, to be yourself, to go the extra mile. And if you have, you know, the passion to do it, you'll do it and you'll achieve and you'll succeed. And I mean, I find myself constantly learning about the things I like most about it are the people you meet along the way, and then learning about the game. Because I'm telling you, just today I was watching a clinic, Vance Wahlberg on the dribble drive motion offense, and, you know, UB Brown on how he prepares for games, and you can always learn and get better and what have you. As far as like moments go, I think I'm looking forward to my next game. It's like every night there's something different. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, personally, I worked the All-Star game back in New York 2 years ago. And, you know, to walk in the employee entrance that, you know, Walt Clyde Frazier and Bill Bradley and Earl Monroe, Willis Reed, that those guys used to walk in, that was special for me, just being a Jersey guy and having, you know, taking the PATH train over to watching the Knicks back in the day, and into the, you know, Bernard King, UB Brown era. So that was special. And to do TV hits at a 30 Rock, where, you know, I've been a huge SNL fan my whole life. That's probably one of the moments that kind of all of a sudden hits you. But you know what? It hits you, and then you realize, listen, man, we're talking hoop. This is like, again, being back on the stoop. This is 79th Street and 5th Avenue. This is not rocket science. So I find it, you know, easy to enjoy the moment, but just not get caught up in it. And also, I think the last thing I'll say on it is always about the players and about the coaches, about the fans, about the environment, and about the game, and not about you. And I think people are very savvy. If you're not yourself, they're gonna pick it up in a heartbeat, and you should only be in it for the right reasons. So that's just kind of my overall take on it. If I had to share some advice, and also kind of how I approach it, and what advice I would give folks.
Bill Herenda, you do it all. NBA contributor, NCAA analyst, and of course, KFBK's morning sports anchor. Thank you so much for your time and your insight tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, guys.
There goes Bill Herenda. Down in Sacramento, the 916, an area Sean Boyd knows all too well.
Yeah, man, it was great having Bill on. And if for those of our listeners who are in the Sacramento area, you probably know he's on KFBK 93.1 FM, 1530 on your AM dial, and on you can catch him also on iHeartRadio. And man, it was great having Bill on and getting a chance to talk with him, Sean, about, you know, his upbringings and going to, you know, he talked about UMass Lowell. That's why I wanted to bring up that question about his playing basketball at UMass. But of course, Sean Wally, I had the chance to be there at UMass Lowell at the Songhees Center with the Harlem Globetrotters, man. And, you know, there's a story that I have about the Songhees Center that really put things into perspective for me, just as Bill talked about, you know, as far as, you know, it's not about you. It's about the fans. It's about the players. It's about everything around you except for you. And, you know, I had that chance at UMass Lowell. A couple of buddies of mine that I got a chance to meet at the end of the game, Anthony and Dominique. I don't know if you remember me telling that story. Anthony is the older brother to Dominique. Anthony is about 10 years old, and Dominique was 7. And these kids come down to the floor with their father. Actually, Anthony comes down to the floor with his dad, and he was trying to get the basketball, the Harlem Globetrotters basketball signed. And, you know, he says, well, you know, my son just got out, you know, out of the hospital, and, you know, I'm trying to get all these, you know, the autographs. Can we get all the Globetrotters autographs? And so, you know, he pointed up to his son and, you know, he said he just had leukemia, but my son Anthony here saved his life. And I said, well, man, can you tell me about it? And, you know, he said, yeah, Anthony gave bone marrow to his little brother Dominique, who had leukemia. And dude, Sean, you know, I mean, man, I can't even begin to tell you, you know, the emotions that started to run, you know, through me. And I said, man, can you take me up to little Dominique? And so, you know, his dad says, sure, we go. I go up there and, you know, I sit there and I meet two of the greatest young men that I could possibly meet. And that happened at the Songhees Center in Lowell, Massachusetts. And, you know, holding back the tears, you know, they wanted my autograph. And I said, no, can I have yours? You know, and, you know, I, you know, tearing up and everything. I have that picture. If for those of you who are friends of mine on Instagram, I have that picture of Dominique and Anthony. I took the picture with them, and man, that changed me tremendously. To, you know, going on the road day in and day out, and then to get a chance to have those stories. But yeah, Lowell, Massachusetts, UMass Lowell also has a place in my heart. Probably not as much as Bill Herinda, but it's got to be pretty close, man.
You know, it's things like that that make you realize the everyday life challenges you think are a big deal, and maybe even riding on a Greyhound bus day in and day out are not that big of a deal.
Yeah, you know, it put things into perspective, and, you know, to see the smiles on those kids' faces and the understanding that, you know, Dominique knew that his brother was his hero. And, you know, I can only imagine, you know, just, I mean, there are adults that wouldn't take that step, you know, that think about themselves more than their family members. And to see a child that just unselfishly said, hey, I will do that for my big brother was just amazing. And so, you know, I visualize it like it was yesterday, being there in Lowell, Massachusetts in the Songhees Center. Beautiful arena, but when you step outside, it's a little piece of Americana. I mean, the cherry blossoms were still out, and, you know, it just looked like, you know, an all-American town, Lowell, Massachusetts. And, you know, who would have thought that, you know, I'd get the chance to meet Bill, and Bill had, you know, playing basketball there at Lowell, University of Massachusetts Lowell, and him getting a chance to be on this show. That's some amazing stuff, Sean.
All right, Sean, we're running short on time, but hey, let's touch on it. Preseason NFL football, Oakland Raiders, what did you see in week 2, and what's the outlook moving forward?
You know, I saw a team in the Oakland Raiders that, you know, still is trying to figure out, you know, their bolster. You know, they know that they have a strong offensive line. They know that they have the talent on offense to make things click. But when it comes to, you know, playing the nostalgic teams like the Green Bay Packers, you know, it just looked like they were, you know, they came out a little flat. And I'm glad that it's preseason. You know, the first half was a pretty good first half. It was 7-3 in favor of the Packers. So the Raiders didn't give up points. It's just that they didn't show anything spectacular. And of course, you know, the second half, you know, let's face it. Those are second, third string guys. You know, if you're looking to get the victory, then yeah, that's great, you know, as far as the end result is concerned. But I was more concerned about, you know, those starters in the first half, you know, and then some of the guys in the second half who were trying to make the team. But, you know, they took one on the chin to the Packers, lost 20-12. But I do see a lot of promise. I see a lot of promise in the defense, on the defensive side. I see Ken Norton Jr. really has those guys dialed up, and they're loading the box and making sure that they're stopping the run. The offense just has to get better, man, and that's it. So they have Tennessee. The Tennessee Titans are coming into town this Saturday, where I will be at the game and working for CBS Sports. And so, you know, we'll see if, you know, they can have some home cooking. This will be their first home game to where, you know, they can show out for the Raider Nation.
Any injuries of note coming out of that game? And what are some players that you're surprised with moving into the biggest dress rehearsal, week three of the preseason?
You know, no big injuries as to speak. You know, I know that they, you know, they had an injury in week one with one of their defensive tackles. And he's going to be out till this, I believe, the second week of the season. So it's not a major injury. Well, I kind of take that back. It's a, you know, a hip injury. So, you know, those things are a little quirky. So the Raiders are doing a pretty good job on staying out of, you know, the injury, having the injury bug. I'd probably say out of the first two games, because I really didn't see anything spectacular the second game. But a surprising athlete in week one, football player in week one, was George Atkinson III. George Atkinson is one of those guys. Actually, he's the son of the famous George Atkinson of the Oakland Raiders on those tough 1970s and 80s teams, early 70s teams. And his son did a pretty good job. You know, he had 95 yards in rushing. He had two touchdowns. One was for 52 yards and 70 yards. So, I'm sorry, 52 yards and 30 yards. And, you know, he did a pretty good job. And so he's looking to make that 53-man roster, and it's not going to be easy. But he's one of the surprises in this early preseason.
And I know, Sean, it's on the tip of your tongue. You were going to ask what happened in the Pacific Northwest with the Seattle Seahawks in their first home game of the preseason, taking on a team that they played in the playoffs and narrowly won in the Frozen Bowl that was back in Minnesota. This time here in Seattle, temperature was about 70 degrees warmer than that playoff game. And really, I mean, except for those guys that shine out and possibly make a roster because they played so well and they come out of nowhere and nobody expects them to do much, this game was the epitome of why preseason football is too long. There should not be four games. The starters don't need it. You know, maybe they should work it to where at some point they have more scrimmages that are at team headquarters type of things. But of course, the almighty dollar is going to rain and they want 40 to 60,000 in each stadium paying full price for games that don't matter. And it finished an 18-11 Viking victory. And I mean, really, it was Trevon Boykin again vying for the backup quarterback job in Seattle, trying to rally the troops for another last second tying or winning touchdown, depending on if Pete Carroll goes for the one or two pointer. And this time he just ran out of time. Poor clock management. And I guess the biggest question right now is Russell Wilson and the number one offense in Seattle has not scored a point. So I'm completely not concerned about that. They're not playing long enough to make it a big deal. The biggest issue right now is making sure the offensive line is stout, and really their run push is incredible. They're getting 2 to 3 yards almost on every play, and Thomas Rawls finally healthy, finally coming back from his broken ankle that he suffered in the playoffs. And so the biggest deal coming into this week's game against the hated, and I mean hated, Dallas Cowboys on Thursday night in Seattle, the final home game for the preseason, will be how Thomas Rawls can play, if he plays at all, and then the pass protection for that offensive line.
Yeah, you know, I had mentioned the Raiders game and how lackluster it was, you know, as far as, you know, what I was looking to see from the offense. And I think that in the preseason, you know, the offense is hard pressed, you know, because defenses, I think they gel a lot quicker, you know, when it comes to the offseason OTAs, preseason football. But at the same time, when you're playing an opposition, it is very important that you show some type of continuity, whether it's preseason or not, that, you know, you make sure that you can show some type of fluidity with your offense. That Seattle game was disturbing to me in the fact that, of course, they did not score in the first half. They were down 11-0 in the first half. And you had mentioned that the offensive line is having problems with keeping Russell Wilson on his feet. Now, there was a team a few years ago that after they had made it to the NFC Championship, that very next year, they went into preseason and they had a hard time scoring. And that carried over into the regular season. And that team said, oh, no, it's no big deal. We're in the NFC Championship. And, you know, we're clicking on all cylinders. Everything's going to be fine. And it wasn't. And that team was the San Francisco 49ers. Now, I'm not saying that the Seattle Seahawks are going to do what the San Francisco 49ers did as far as just totally making a plummet the very next year. But it is a concern when you have your team, especially when there are a lot of prognosticators that say that this team is supposed to be a team that is, you know, making a run for the Super Bowl. And Thomas Rawls did his thing. More important, Tremaine Pope was actually the highlight for the Seattle Seahawks with 10 carries and 86 yards and a touchdown. But at some point, as I'm mentioning, it was 11-11 late in the game. And, you know, the Seahawks had a chance to make their mark. And then there was I believe that pick six was late in the game. I'm not sure if Marcus Sherrill's pick six was late in the game. But I believe that that one determined it. And so, you know, it's something that Seattle is going to have to take a look at if they're having a hard time scoring.
Well, you've got a few factors in that. And the starters typically don't play very long, especially the first two games of the preseason. This Thursday night will be a much better barometer of where the number one offense is, because most of, if not all of the starters will be out there. The only question mark right now is Thomas Rawls and whether or not he will start. Kristen Michael is showing out at running back. He has matured and is doing great things and apparently learned from last season when he was with three different teams, four if you count his return to the Seattle Seahawks when injuries happened to Marshawn Lynch. So, you know, the third preseason game, as it will be for the Raiders, the starters tend to play longer, at least the first half, if not coming out after halftime to get used to that and to see how they do and have a better barometer of where they're at heading into the season.
Yeah, you had mentioned, Tremaine Pope, and he had the 10 carries for 95 yards for the Seahawks, and I'm sure that he's trying to buy for a spot on the 53-man roster, probably to be a special teamer. But, you know, this young man, a rookie out of Anniston, Alabama, went to Jacksonville State. And so, yeah, for those of you who are saying who, which I don't know if you were watching the game, you would know who. But Tremaine Pope doing his thing for the Seattle Seahawks. And, yeah, week three, we should see the starters doing their thing a little bit more. And there should be some cohesiveness. Hopefully for both teams, your Seahawks and my Raiders.
Who do your Raiders have week three, and which day do they play? Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
Gosh, man, weren't you paying attention to what I said a couple of minutes ago? Man, the Tennessee Titans are coming into town on Saturday, and I will be working
Titans
for CBS.
I didn't hear the day.
Man, so that is a CBS game. That game will be the kickoff is at 5 p.m., so that should be a lot of fun for those of you who want to watch some great football. You'll probably see it on the NFL Network nationally, CBS locally, and that should be a good one, man.
So Marcus Mariota against David Carr, hopefully at least for the first half.
Yeah, you talk about a preseason champion. Marcus Mariota, man, he puts up just tremendous numbers in the preseason. I think last week he was like 9 of 10 for 140 yards and a touchdown. And, you know, of course, his claim to fame as a rookie in training camp was that he didn't throw an incomplete pass and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, yeah, the Tennessee Titans are a team that is on the verge of becoming a good team in the AFC. And so it should be a good barometer for the Raiders in week three of the preseason. So how about the Seahawks? Who do they have coming up in week three?
Well, as maybe you didn't hear earlier, I said we hated Dallas Cowboys, but I know you're not asking for yourself. You're asking for maybe the listener that was, you know, not paying attention for 2 seconds when I mentioned that. Tony Romo and crew will be in Seattle by Wednesday. And, of course, great weather awaiting them in the summer in Seattle. The beautiful Pacific Northwest and a nearly sold out CenturyLink, which tough to imagine considering, yes, it's a game. Yes. Well, the third preseason game is the best. So I can understand. Plus the Cowboys, their fans travel well as well. So it'll be a good matchup, at least for the first half, if not into the second half.
Now, is Tony Romo even playing? I mean, I wouldn't even put him out on the field. You got Dak Prescott doing his thing. I mean, I was just talking about Marcus Mariota being a preseason All-American. Dak Prescott, man, 12 of 15 last week, 199 yards and 2 TDs. And, of course, in week one, they play against the Los Angeles Rams down there in the L.A. Coliseum, and Dak Prescott did his thing. I don't know what's going on with Tony Romo. But I think Seahawks, it'd be good for them to see somebody like Dak Prescott coming in and playing against them.
Well, because of that game, I've heard a good amount, and I'm sure so of our listeners, about Prescott. And some prognosticators had him ranked as highly as the 4th best quarterback in the entire NFL draft. So the Cowboys saw something in him, and hey, they need to find the heir apparent to Romo. He's not getting any younger. He's getting closer to that 40 number that we all don't like. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's Romo's job. He'll at least, you would figure, play the first quarter, probably the first half, but we'll wait and see come Thursday night in Seattle when our boy, former multiple-time guest Aaron Levine hosts the pre-halftime and post-game show on Q13 and the Seahawks Broadcasting Network.
Yeah, you know, with Dak, you know, his career at Mississippi State was, you know, I mean, he had a decent career, but it was nothing like what we see now with the Dallas Cowboys, which proves that the Cowboys do have a strong offensive line, allowing Dak to just, you know, pick DBs apart. I mean, the kid's 6'2", 238 pounds, you know, and as you had mentioned, he's a 4th-round pick, and so, you know, he could be one of those steals in the draft to where, yeah, he could be the predecessor to Tony Romo if his shoulder can't hold up, or his back for that matter, because, you know, Tony Romo, it seems that he has more back injuries than anything.
Well, Sean, it's been a fun show as usual. Great having first-time, big-time guest on the show, Bill Herenda, sports anchor at KFBK there in Sacramento, as well as NBA contributor, NCAA analyst. He does everything all around the U.S. in TV and radio. Talked a lot of Olympics this show. Sean, it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been a great show, and it's good having Bill Herenda on. And again, as Sean Wally just mentioned, you can catch him on KFBK 93.1 FM in Sacramento, 1530 on your AM dial and on the internet at iHeartRadio. Yep, Mr. Wally, another show in the books, my friend. And of course, you can always tune in to On the Double with the Double S Express. You can go to bbsradio.com/DSX to find all the previous guests on the double. You can click on those archives and listen to great sports talk. Mr. Wally, another great show in the books, my friend. For Sean Wally in the Pacific Northwest, yours truly here in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California, Doug Newsom in Paradise, California, our engineer. You have been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. As we always say on the show, You're not in the game unless you take a shot, and when you take that shot, we hope it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.